Thank you for this very generous introduction. It was a great pleasure to be a part of this this book effort, and I can indeed recommend to everybody to purchase the book. And in fact, in order to get anything in writing from me, you actually have to purchase it, because I did not upload a PowerPoint presentation, unfortunately. I do have, however, in addition to the book, a few fact sheets here if you're interested particularly in US healthcare reform, which is what I'm going to be talking about. These fact sheets address healthcare reform from the perspective of different disadvantaged groups, such as immigrants, women, and people of color. So I thought what I would do today is sort of provide an addendum to the chapter in the book, which I wrote together with Ben. Ben did the international perspective and framework applied to the US context, and how it developed historically in this country, or rather really did not quite develop. The US has not really committed to any of the treaties that Ben mentioned. So we don't have much of a legal basis to work with in the United States. And nevertheless, there are many groups around the country, including my own organization, which try to inject a human rights perspective into healthcare reform efforts in this country. And there are also groups who work on the more general underlying determinants of health efforts, obviously, but I'm focusing on health care. So let me just go a little bit into sort of current politics as an addendum and an update to the chapter in the book. So as we heard from Ben, when we look at human rights, they have applications in the legal realm. Also, there are norms, there are normative applications. They can be applied to policy and to practice, including practices such as political organizing. So I want to focus now on the normative aspect of human rights in relation to national healthcare politics and policy. So as we've heard from Ben, governments have an obligation to respect, protect, and fulfill our right to a system of health protection, which means it should provide equal opportunity for people to enjoy the highest level of attainable health. So that's the prescription with the legal character as it is set down in the international framework, which we've learned about today. But clearly, the acceptance of laws requires political processes. And in the US, this most recent healthcare reform debate has been such a process, and indeed not just the debate, but the agreement and adoption of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, that is the Health Reform Act agreed by Congress and signed by President Obama in March. It is important to realize that this has been a struggle on an ideological terrain. And I think, because we're all aware how painful the struggle was, it is not difficult to understand that we're really talking about fundamental values here that we've seen clashing in the process of this discussion. And I would like us to reflect on how we can use human rights as a strategy and as a tool to win this ideological struggle. I would argue, and I did to some extent argue in the book, that President Obama and the health care reform law as agreed in March basically ceded this normative terrain from the start as they adopted opponents' values and concepts. And those concepts and values are, if I describe them in a nutshell, competition, choice, and focus on costs. This includes a focus on actually not change, but on stability, that is, on keeping what you have. That was a key slogan of health reformers in this past process. So healthcare remained a commodity in the way that Democrats in Congress, activists, and the president looked at it, despite some rhetorical flourishes to the contrary, but this, the focus of the discourse was on increasing competition between insurance companies, opening up the market to provide more choice for consumers, and then to reduce the total cost of healthcare. So this was sort of the frame in which they were putting forward, and I would argue that this meant that millions of healthcare reformers, and there were millions out there last year, they were all energized. There was buildup of at least the past 3 years. Sadly, not since the Clinton healthcare reform effort. Otherwise, I think we would have made more progress. But at least for the past few years, there was quite a mobilization of healthcare reformers. And I think by adopting this kind of language that was firmly rooted within the market-based healthcare system, that these reformers actually fought on their opponents' terrain. And these, what I mean by opponents is people who not only just wanted to keep the status quo of market-based private health care in this country, but actually further dismantle public programs. And we see this very much coming to the fore right now. So in last week's elections, those opponents won very handsomely, and they used big ideas such as freedom, a limited role of government, anti-taxation, and they used the message of repealing the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act to address the fears, popular fears that they had stoked themselves. And they did that by promising actually less change and lower costs. So again, the policy solutions are at a similar level. It's always focused on costs. It's focused on, do we need more or less competition? What is the role of the consumer? What is the role of the corporate industry, which is what it is in this country? But the values, the principles, the opponents of healthcare reform used are actually much broader than those employed by the Democrats. So you have a big word like freedom, very much being part of this current debate, being injected in a way that actually, one could argue means exactly the opposite of freedom, because we've just heard how under the human rights framework you obviously cannot be free. If you cannot be healthy, then your other rights are restricted as well. Yet, so I would argue that the repeal forces were fed by the Democrats, and they were fed long before the law was even adopted. The focus was on developing a law that in the end spends $1 trillion on a reform that was supposed to square the circle of delivering change while keeping pretty much everything the same. And how can we win an ideological struggle and a policy struggle by promising something like exchanges, individual mandates, less Medicare Advantage, more research? How can we win that struggle? And then while using our opponents' terms such as competition and consumption. So these are essential, pretty wonkish policy concepts. And they're also not just wonkish concepts, but they're in effect actually serve to preserve the for-profit insurance industry. So both on a level of values and on a level of policy solutions, I don't see this as having provided any alternative to the more value-based approach that opponents have taken. Who's going to vote for exchanges? Or even the law's best-selling point, which is sort of an acceptance of all applicants with pre-existing conditions. Well, I think you need a very, very formidable PR agency to explain that point. And it's also easily trumped by the message of, well, they'll force you to buy a product you may not want. Well, in fact, in policy terms, this is exactly what the new health reform law does. It evades collective responsibility by pushing all obligations onto individuals. So we have meaningful health reform for which the momentum and the moment was there, challenged by an ideological or normative agenda. And we must therefore, we should have therefore countered this with an agenda based on normative principles. So whereas the defenders of the Marx-based status quo, particularly Republicans, had actively aligned their values and had done this in decades of tactical politics to yield certain policy prescriptions, we had not done the same thing. So this ideological sort of bubble that Republicans or right-wingers or whatever you want to call them created very skillfully, this cannot be brushed away with just hard data and facts about our healthcare system, however correct these are. I mean, just saying how many people are uninsured and so on and so forth, this is all true, but these arguments have not been enough and they are not enough because they don't address the issue at the normative level. So it's about understanding that ideology is not a figment of people's imagination. It's as real as the number of people without insurance. So if the Republicans manage to sell this as an issue of government overreach or freedom or whatever, whichever way they characterize it, they don't, you know, resort to facts or data. Those are the values they put out there, and they need to be addressed as such. So I would argue that we can't fight ideology with a technical solution. We can't do it on the left with single payer as the main message, and most certainly we can't do it with a set of policies that actually perpetuate the current system, a system that violates the human right to health. So we need to fight that struggle with principles and with principled policies. So human rights are more than international law, and they're more than an analytical tool, although they're a pretty great analytical tool, I think. They give us principles that oppose the radical abdication of collective responsibility promoted by market ideologues. Human rights also, obviously, and I won't go into detail on that, they unite people. They build solidarity through emphasizing our common humanity rather than dividing us into different population segments. But we currently have a political culture that pits rights and rights holders and the government's obligation to protect those rights, including the solidarity and the public goods needed to provide that protection. That's pitted against consumers, the whole, you know, idea of consumers buying a certain insurance product, individualism, market competition. So those are the forces against that work against looking at healthcare and recognizing healthcare as a human right. But this is not, these two sides, they're not in equilibrium in which sort of the pendulum can swing easily back and forth. We have here a structure of power, and in order to make human rights prevail over what is the hegemonic market ideology, we need to engage in a struggle for power grounded in a normative human rights vision. So what we need to do is we need to continue trying to shift the discourse. There are many people, many groups that have tried to do this over the past few years, but not quite successfully. And so we need to move from a commodity to a rights frame. We need to recognize healthcare as a public good. And this will then enable us to change policy from market-based insurance to a publicly financed and a publicly administered healthcare system. So how do we use the framework that international human rights provide, the framework that we heard about, access, availability, acceptability, and quality? Healthcare facilities, goods, and services must be available, acceptable, accessible, and of good quality for everyone, everywhere, on an equitable basis, everywhere in the country. So from these basic principles that we have outlined in international law, we can move on to distill the principles of universality, and universality gives us a much clearer message, if well-defined, than the message around competition and choice, which is exclusionary. We can foreground the principle of equity, which gives us a much better tool than focusing when we look at how costs are distributed, focusing on total or average healthcare costs. What we need to focus on when we look at costs is an equitable distribution of costs we need to ask who pays rather than how much does it all cost. Not that, well, rather than is maybe an overstatement, we need to focus on that too, but we need to move on to look at distribution and redistribution rather than average figures in order to look at an equitable approach to health reform. And then finally, we can distill from that the principle of accountability and therefore how healthcare is indeed and needs to be provided as a public good. That is, instead of having consumer access to a market commodity, you have common access shared by all that's inclusive. So I have 5 minutes left, so let me just look at let me give you sort of a very brief example of how this has been used by people who adopted a human rights approach, then by market reformers, which is what I call Democrats and the Obama administration, and by market fundamentalists. So if we, from a human rights perspective, adopt a principle of universality, what we want in a healthcare system is we want to include everyone in a universal, unified system. What the market reformers did, they wanted to improve market management of the healthcare industry through competition and through choice for consumers, looking at mainly at private insurers. And what market fundamentalists want to do, stressing the value of freedom, they don't want any regulation of the market. For them, corporations' interests are more important than consumer interests. And so, for example, the policies that they favor are very cheap, bare-bones insurance plans. So if we move on to the human rights principle of equity, where we can argue from a human rights perspective that we want a free, prepaid healthcare system, prepaid meaning through a system of broad-based taxation, based on everyone paying what they can and everybody getting what they need. What the market reformers did was suggesting that we subsidize private health coverage for those who need it and that we retain safety net coverage. So these are by no way bad approaches, and the expansion of Medicaid is very welcome, but there's still band-aid answers to cost concerns that have very different systemic roots. And the market fundamentalists, of course, they stress personal responsibility, self-reliance, and they feel like we should have a choice of coverage. Obviously, we know who can have a choice and who doesn't. They don't want subsidies, and now they're even looking to withdraw from Medicaid, if you've followed the news, especially in states like Texas. And then finally, if we look at the human rights principle of accountability and public goods, it is really about ensuring accountability to the people and to share costs and benefits equitably among all. Whereas market reformers emphasize protecting consumers and increasing security for insurance policyholders. And market fundamentalists focus on privacy, look at healthcare as a private matter, and don't want to intervene at all. Now, I would argue that in this analysis, market reformers have not sort of found the third way. They have not achieved a compromise solution, like a middle ground. I don't think it worked this way, and I think that the current political situation shows that something is lacking. Their approach actually strengthened the market fundamentalists by emphasizing the fundamentalist values, and it strengthened the insurance industry through the whatever it is, $460 billion subsidy that they will get for guaranteed customers. So instead of capitalizing on the momentum generated by a pretty large movement for healthcare reform, I think that the market reformers actually ended up weakening the movement by splitting it and by forcing many to be sort of government cheerleaders. And many advocates and activists now feel compelled to help explain and implement the new law. They feel compelled to defend it. So instead of having, you know, a broad-based struggle for universal equitable health care, We now, you know, feel like advocates and activists are on a retreat. They're basically use a defensive approach. So that's my rather pessimistic assessment of where we are at the federal and national level in healthcare reform right now. I do want to mention, as on a bit of an upbeat note, there's lots of activities still going on at state level, and I want to mention the state of Vermont as a good example. In Vermont, there's a group that I work with, the Vermont Workers Center. They've been running for the past two to three years a healthcare is a human right campaign. And they've done this as a from the ground up grassroots effort. They did not highlight, you know, certain technical single payer type solutions, although single payer is where they want to go. But they adopted a very principled approach, worked with the population, conducted all kinds of different hearings, involved a huge amount of the Vermont population, and reached out to legislature, and won a law that. That compels the state of Vermont, that mandates the state of Vermont to design a health system based on human rights principles. And Vermont is one of the very few states, unfortunately California is the other one, where we've actually had a Democratic governor win the election, and the governor, Peter Shumlin, has promised to make healthcare a human right in Vermont. So there you have the example of a long-term grassroots campaign based on normative principles that is now on the cusp of success, and that deserves our support. So that's just as an upbeat note as to what may work as opposed to what didn't work. Thank you.